flyers for me. Appreciate that. All right. We're in Psalm 10, and we're going to learn a new tune today. It's not new. You've heard it before, but we're going to go over it. Take your blue hymnal and turn to number 106, I think. Yes, 106. No, wait. Yes, it is. 106. Then you take your little black Psalter and turn to Psalm 10. Now, I am not a musician in the truest sense. I learned to read music years and years ago when I was learning the guitar. And so I don't know enough about music to teach you anything about the notes or anything. But if you look at the hymn by Isaac Watts, "I sing the almighty power of God that made the mountains rise." The tune on here, it's broken up in the music notation, and the best way I can describe it for laymen that are non-musicians is it's da-dum, 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 da-dum. That's the beat. The da is quick, da, and it's dum. So it's a little bit longer than the da. Da-dum, 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 da-dum. So if you look at the notes, you can follow along. It's da dum 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 da dum. And then you see that little upside down crescent with a dot under it on the middle line toward the end. I think that thing's called like a bird's eye or something. What that pretty much does is it gives me the ability to tell you when we're going to cut it off, so you pay attention to the song leader. The worship leader, and he cuts it off when we get there. So the song would go something like this: da dum da dum da dum da dum da dum da dum da 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 dum da dum da dum da da. And then the next two notes are da da, not da dum, but da da, the two short ones. Da da dum da dum da da, and that's all we sing. We don't sing the refrain. So that's the tune, and that's the way it's supposed to sound. But when I start leading it, anything can happen. So we're going to try Psalm 10, a few verses of it, and see how we do. For those that are musically minded out there, please forgive my just now trespasses. So they were bad, and I know a whole note is like a big old circle with a hole in it. It looks like a donut, kind of crooked donut. And after that, I'm kind of lost. So let's try this. Wherefore it is that thou, O Lord, dost stand from us afar? And wherefore hidest thou thyself when times so troublous are? Okay, so you kind of got that. Now, the key is you want to learn the tune well enough that you're able then to focus on the words, that the tune doesn't overpower the words. It's one of the things I like about common meter songs is that they're common enough that you can kind of get the tune and the rhythm easy, because we believe that singing is an intricate part of our worship. It is it's indispensable in worship. We believe it's critically important. It doesn't prep you and hype you or anything of that nature. It's not our goal, but it's to instruct you. And so if you're not listening and singing with understanding, then you're missing the point of singing in worship. You want to understand what you're singing, because we're supposed to be taught from what we are singing. We're supposed to be learning. We're supposed to be being reproved and corrected as we sing the Word of God. And so that's where I want you to get. So hopefully within a couple of weeks you'll get used to the tune. Maybe you'll walk around humming the tune. Da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-da. Maybe you'll just practice that tune. And the neat thing is once you get the tune in your head, you can really start focusing on the words. So let's start over, verse number one, and let's try this again. And we'll start singing, and we'll sing through a few verses here. Wherefore it is that Thou, O Lord, dost stand from us afar, and wherefore hidest Thou Thyself when times so troublous are? The wicked in his loftiness doth persecute the poor. In these devices they have framed, let them be taken sure. The wicked of his heart's desire, boasting great, he blesseth him that's covetous, whom yet the Lord doth hate. The wicked through his pride of faith on God he doth not call, and in the counsels of his heart the Lord is not at all. His ways they always grievous are, thy judgments from his sight. Removed are at all his foes, he puffeth with despite. One more verse. Within his heart he thus hath said, I shall not moved be, and no adversity at all shall ever come to me. And we'll get better at it as we sing, I hope. And I'll practice it during the week. You practice it during the week. And hopefully we'll get to where we can just do this real well. So Psalm 10. I handed out, most of you have a copy of it. I tried to give one or two a family. And if you didn't get one, and somebody's got two in front of you, take one of theirs away from them, and you can look over it. But it's just a brief introduction. The title of the lesson today is, Why Are You Hiding? Why are you hiding? And if you, and as we read the text, you'll get the idea from that. But this little introduction just basically tells you the basics of it. The first guy was John Gill that I quoted here. He said, Antichrist, anti-Christian times are very manifestly described. In other words, he says, laid out very openly are impious times. And he says it's the impiety, blasphemy, atheism, pride, haughtiness, boasting of himself, presumption of security, persecution of the poor, murder of innocents are plainly pointed at. So it's like the psalmist in this particular psalms brings out all of the impiety of the day. And he says, nor does the character of the man of the earth agree too well to any as to him. His times are times of trouble, but at the end of them, the kingdom of Christ will appear in great glory. Of course, the psalm does end with two three fabulous verses. Verse number 16 of our text, the Lord is king forever and ever. The heathen are perished out of his land. And so even though things look bad, he says, God's still in charge. And then I quoted from Albert Barnes' commentary where he says it's broken into two clear sections with that conclusion starting in verse 16. He says verse 1 through 11 is a description of the enemy of God's people, particularly the poor in spirit. And in the second half, it's a call to God to interpose himself and deliver his people. And then those concluding verses. And there's a little summary there that somebody came up with that I thought was a helpful little summary of the verses. And you can kind of read through the verses and look over them. But I have a little summary of my own, and we're going to look at that. I didn't give you that summary. I don't think I gave you that summary. But we'll go over that as we look at these verses. And so let's look at our text. Let's go to the text here of Psalm 10. My outline would be this. The wicked are telling themselves lies. That'd be my first point, is that the wicked tells themselves lies, and they believe them. They say things that are untrue, and they say them as though they believe them. Have you ever heard somebody giving a news report and they're giving their opinion? And really, news broadcasting is a lot less reporting now and more opining. You know, when you listen to them on there, well, you know what I think, you know. And because of the handsomeness and the beauty of the presenters nowadays and the professional setting that they give their opinion in, we begin to kind of adore them in their own way. You know, oh, that's a familiar face to me. I know who this person is. You know, when they speak, I really am where I kind of like this person. You know, we had Ben Smith from WHNT 19 come and speak, and several people wanted to come see him because he's their favorite weather guy. You know, well, what about him makes him favorite over somebody else? It's a way we get used to the presentation. We get comfortable hearing him every single day. And let me ask you this. Do you play video excerpts of my sermon on your TV every single day and watch and listen to me opining? Oh, you don't? Okay. But we'll sit through 30 minutes or an hour of a news broadcast many times, letting this one individual become very familiar to our psyche and to our emotional attachment as they talk. And they do draw you in with their emotions when they talk, because they'll be like, a very sad development has just occurred. And they'll give you the sad development. Now, they've prepped you and they've got you emotionally ready to receive a very sad report. Their voice changed. They gave a face, you know, that, you know, very sad report came in. And then they'll have things like, and on the news front today, something very exciting. Now you're to be excited. And your emotions are just like, ha, 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 in the news report. You know, all the way through the news report. We have a psychological attachment to presentations like that that you don't realize is happening. And I wasn't suggesting that you watch an hour's worth of my video every day at your house. That's not what I was suggesting. What I'm saying is you would be surprised at how attached you are to somebody that you really don't like their opinion, but you listen because you don't want to be out of the loop. And before you know, you're more attached than you think you are. And when we begin to look at this text of Scripture, what you're going to see is that the wicked are saying things to ease their own consciences, to ease their own minds, and to justify the reasons they do what they do. And this happens all the time. For example, the poor are really insignificant. They're insignificant. Look at verse number 2. The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. The wicked is proud. He proudly persecutes the poor because he thinks he is doing that something that is valiant. So he persecutes the poor. And of course, most writers look at this as those that are poor in spirit, but certainly it could be poor in things of the world, as far as monetary means. And then in verses 8 through 10, he says, he sitteth in the lurking places of the villages, in the secret places doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privily set against the poor. And he goes on to say in verse 9, he lieth in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lieth in wait to catch the poor. Then in verse 10, he croucheth and humbleth himself that the poor may fall by his strong ones. So there is an overt attack on the poor, and the wicked is saying, that's okay because the poor are insignificant. They're unimportant, so we can do these things to them. We can make these attacks. My wife sent me a link the other day to three books that Christians need to be reading in the present society today. She didn't come up with these three books. Somebody did, and she was saying, what do you think about this, basically. Sent it to me, and I was looking at it. And one of the books was written by a guy who was showing all the European countries where Christianity was well entrenched, and socialism came in, and communism came into some of the places, and anti-Christian rhetoric was being taught, and how the churches just began to fold one after another, until finally the countries are basically a state religion, if any religion at all, and all of these countries are now humanistic. And it was like, this is what's coming to your front door. You need to be aware of it. And so I went ahead and ordered the book because I thought, you know, I'd like to read this and just see what this guy's take is, because he's taking it from this historical happening where nation after nation was once called a Christian nation. And I do that because I'm not sure of their orthodox views, but how the political mindset and the persecution against the poor in spirit was enough that many churches closed their doors. And now there's a strong underground church movement in a lot of these countries. And so the wicked are saying, this is an insignificant portion of our world, this Christian section. And if you'll remember, when Christianity first started out, as far as in the book of Acts, we'll go to the book of Acts and look at it there, it was a lot of the poor people. Now, there were some very wealthy people that were mentioned. There were rulers. There were people of significant stature that came into Christianity. But overall, Christianity in the outset was really a lot of the sideline community, a lot of the poor. And becoming a Christian meant that you might forfeit your wealth because of persecution. And you might lose status, and you might lose position. And so the wicked are saying, see, obviously being a Christian isn't a good thing, because they don't succeed as far as their definition of success is concerned. Because the wicked do have a definition of success. And their definition of success ought to be counter to what our definition of success is. And so they lie to themselves by saying the poor are insignificant. And they also lie to themselves by saying, what I want is exactly what I'm going to get. What I want is what I am going to get, one way or the other. Verse 3, the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire, and blesseth the covetous, whom the Lord abhorreth. So one of the characteristics then is they lie to themselves, saying, I'm going to get whatever it is I want. You can't stop me from having what I want. And it's a terrifying thought that if I want something, all I have to do is march in the street, burn the city, and take it. And watch those who enforce the law step back and not stop me. And so they boast in this. They boast in it, and they actually call their movements sometimes pride movements. Do you find any irony in this when you read that the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire, and the very elements of society that demand and scream the loudest and destroy property label their movements as pride movements, or movements that matter, such as Black Lives Matter, as though they didn't matter for some reason. And Christianity has never suggested black lives don't matter. Never once. But guess who is sidelined now? The poor in spirit, the Christian. It's a startling view when you begin to look at Psalm 10 in light of what's happening in our world today. But don't think that you are living on some little island on the chronological timeline, that this has never happened before. We have a tendency in our own pride and haughtiness, and maybe a little bit of foolishness, to imagine that we're in the worst of the worst of times. when you're going to go home with luxuries today that people previous to you have only imagined, if they even had the ability to imagine it. Pastor Josh was going to be late this morning because the freezing compartment on his food storage device wasn't working properly. Now, a generation or two ago, that would have been a joke, you know. I was thinking about my dad when they were growing up. He was telling me how they stored potatoes to keep them from ruining, you know, over the winter. And he said, and I remember, you know, toward the end of the winter, you know, we would be picking through the potatoes. You know, can we rub the bad spot off this one so we can have a good potato? You know, because maybe this one didn't get enough lime sprinkled on it and a bug got into it or something. But we'll just cut that bad spot off and eat the rest of this potato. And you and I, you know, we'll throw the bag of potatoes away. It smells. You know, we don't want that. And so we have a completely different mindset. So it's very hard for us a lot of times to look at writing like this and imagine anything worse than how we've got it. Wow, this is talking about exactly what we're suffering. Now, I'll be honest, I've not suffered at the hands of the Black Lives Movement personally, or the Gay Pride Movement, or any other movement like that personally. They've not come and done something to me individually. We see, you know, they haven't burned down my business. Nothing like that has happened. But we see it happening all around us, and we love to identify with that. For some reason, when we're enjoying right now the height of peace and prosperity in this congregation, we are at the height. I mean, you think about it. Most of you are making multiple times more than your mothers and fathers made financially. Multiple times more. And you say, well, things cost more. Of course they do. I get that. I get that. But we're enjoying things in our day that we ought to count as undeniable blessings, but things that too can cause our hearts to be covetous. Somebody sent me a little video clip of a comedian recently, and he was talking about his 102-year-old grandfather and how he walked out onto a piece of property after World War II and went, I'm going to build a house here, and just built a house. And this comedian was relishing in the fact that he watched a YouTube video and figured out how to fix his commode. And how proud he was that he could do that. And I was sharing that with my wife, and she were saying, you know, this is the expression of our modern day society. You know, he walks out, looks at a piece of property, builds a house. And I said, the difference is we probably wouldn't live in his house. If we were transported to a house just like the one he built, we would be like, where are all the conveniences? I'm not living here. We're suffering from a lot of pampering from our technology and things that cause us to not really be willing to be any less humble or any more sacrificing, probably. And so I concern myself with the thought of, am I one of the covetous? Am I one of the ones here that the wicked might bless? Well, it's a good thing those Christians haven't totally bowed out of technology, because, you know, the multi-billion dollar company Apple wouldn't be doing so well if it weren't for all of us in here. Now, some of you very proud people have an Android, and you're like, I don't have one of them Apple products, a bunch of crooks. And Android, of course, is the consummate Christian corporation, I'm sure. But the point being is we all feed into it in society, and we've got to guard ourselves against covetousness. Because when the next commercial comes out for the upgrade on this phone, I think this is one of those 6 Plus or something like that. So whatever the next one is, and I bet I missed a few, but since the updates have come out, but I have to guard myself against getting another phone just for the sake of having the latest. And that's a temptation for me, as I'm sure it is for you. Well, I don't have the newest. I need the newest. Why do you need the newest? Because I'm not in style. I'm not hip. I'm not cool. And we talk about young people having trouble with that type of stuff. Us older folks have the same challenge.
Hey, did you see the latest thing that came out? Wow, wouldn't that be cool? Let's upgrade to that. And we jump on board. And then we fuss at our kids. Now, don't follow the crowd. As you're punching your iPhone 28 or whatever's out, you know. We do that. So I don't want to be the covetous that the wicked look at and bless. Thank you for supplying us with the ability to continue to persecute the poor. And we have a question and answer session every first Sunday, which is today, by the way. We'll have a question and answer session this afternoon after lunch in lieu of our afternoon service. And people can send in questions and they can ask things. And then Pastor Josh and myself do our best to answer them to the best of our ability. And a question was asked, how do we, you know, without just boycotting the world, you know, everything in the world, how do we function in the world but not, you know, to be in the world but not of the world? That was a really good question. Pastor Josh answered that question. I thought he did a great job in answering it. And but in the limited time he had, he only had about 10 minutes or so to discuss it. And it was a helpful reminder to me to hear his arguments as to, yes, we are in the world, and yes, we have to make friends of unrighteous mammon, and yes, we may work for a corporation that we don't hold all the values of that corporation, but we certainly don't have to be like that corporation. And it was a very, very big challenge to my heart, you know, as I listened to him describing all that. All correct, I felt like, in his description, but I just don't want to fall into the trap of the covetous. To be the covetous, to be that hungry, greedy individual that thinks he's got to have the latest of everything. because the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire. Here's what I want, and I'm going to bless the covetous because here's what I want, and the way I get it is if more people are covetous. So you see, he blesses the covetous. He says, oh, this is what I want. Here's how I'll get it. I'll get it off the back of covetous people. I'll become more wealthy because people are covetous and will want what I offer them the way I offer it to them. Bless the covetous because I can have my heart's desire. And you see that and you realize then, wow, is there a way I can go around that? And of course, there's a lot of states and government systems that I would say unwittingly many times step in and make it possible for the covetous or for the wicked to benefit off the backs of the covetous, and we don't realize it's happening a lot of times. How many here have ever heard of seed sharing? Seed sharing. Have you ever heard of a seed sharing bank? Yeah. Okay, some of you are shaking your head, yes. But not you really, Mandy, because you're from Mississippi. And in Mississippi, you shared seeds with your neighbor. You know, you would take corn seeds to your neighbor and maybe they would give you watermelon seeds and things of this nature. And then there's a huge number of states now that have come out with laws forbidding seed sharing. Now, you and I would go, now what in the world, why would you forbid seed sharing? Well, the large seed manufacturers and the companies that oversee the marketing of the seeds have discovered there is a danger of cross-contamination of diseases if you do this. And so for the protection and the health, so the USDA, the FDA, and several other wonderful government entities have stepped in to protect the American people and to prevent them from destroying one another by handing off contaminated seeds. So the last thing I want to do is give a contaminated corn seed to my neighbor who would give me a contaminated watermelon seed and then us destroy the entire ecosystem, because that happens about every other year when people trade seeds. But what happens is the non-hybridized seeds then begin to compete with what the corporations are putting out. And so under the mantle of protecting my neighbor and loving my neighbor, will allow a government entity to say you can't take your grandpa's cantaloupe seeds and plant them. That would be illegal. You'd be breaking the law. And so the wicked begins to boast as they look at what they can control and what they can do off the backs of people that will agree with them and do those things. And many times it's done for very covetous reasons. And so we see laws, and we have to, you really as a Christian have to ask the question, is the wicked up to something? And you're saying, we're trying to create all of us to be conspiracy theorists. You all are, you just don't know it. Because anytime you say, well, why would they do that? Well, now wait a minute, they've only got your best interest in mind. Okay? Don't be asking why. Just do. Do what they say and you'll be better off. We have to be extremely careful in today's society because the wicked are also subtle. They're subtle. And a lot of the things they do will be so subtle that you can't see the ramifications of it unless you play out the end result. And when you start playing it out and saying, wow, if I can't trade seeds with Mandy and for her to make sure she gives me some watermelon seeds for the corn seeds, if I can't do that, then all of my seeds have to be bought from a central location, which now controls my food source. And while you sit here today with plenty to eat, in fact, one person told me they don't need to put in a garden because their garden is Walmart. And I'm like, you're right. Your garden is Walmart. And all we need is one little 3-day shutdown and delay of trucking and your garden just dried up. It was all it would take. And so why would it be important that I can share seeds with Mandy? What would be the end result if I'm prevented from doing something like that by law? It's because the wicked love to boast of their heart's desire, and they bless the covetous, whom the Lord abhorreth. Well, not only do they lie to themselves and say the wicked are the poor are insignificant and I'll get what I want, but they say God's not important. God's not important. Now, in the South, it's very common for Southerners to run on religious tickets. Now, they call themselves Republicans or Democrats, but they are religious tickets in the South a lot of times, as they advertise themselves as Christian conservatives, or they advertise themselves as Sunday school teachers. I'm sure you've seen the political ads, you know, Jim Johnson, Sunday school teacher, father, grandfather, business owner, pet owner, you know. And, you know, they name all the things they may get you. Loves bacon. You know, you're like, hey, if he loves bacon and he teaches Sunday school, we're going to vote for this guy, you know. Although he didn't know that the bacon he's eating is probably made by a Chinese-owned corporation because they own the largest pork-producing facilities in the world. He's still all-American. And we hear that and we say, so God is important. But then when the same politician gets elected and goes to Washington, there's never a bill introduced to stop abortion. There's a compromise made for this and there's a compromise made for that. In order to get the big thing done and take care of the economy, we needed to. And nothing ever changes. And we continue on the same path. God is an important. Verse number 4, the wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. Just not there. He's not in all his thoughts. He may be in some of his words. But the smiling face that's presented to us many times is not the truth. He's lying. He's saying God is not important. I will use God as a vehicle to get me to where I want to be. If it's acceptable in this circle, I'll be at the men's prayer breakfast to promote my cause. But if it's not, then I won't. God's not important. And we're sadly in a situation right now where there's an election coming up and it's just hard to wade through all the things that's being said. Who's lying? Are they all as amazing as their commercials declare? Are they all that amazing? If they are, they need to do equal eldership and run the state. You know, just let them all become governor if they're that good. But obviously, one stands against the other in some way. Then another lie that the wicked tells themselves is that I can't be destroyed. There's nothing you can do to stop me. Verse number 6 says, "For he has said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in adversity." I will never be in adversity. I shall not be moved. Nothing is going to move me. Here I am. I'm safe. I'm protected. My position is right. Nothing's going to happen. So this is a lie he tells himself. When in fact, the Bible very clearly declares in verse 16, the Lord is king forever and ever. The heathen are perished out of his land. They're not going to make it. But yet the lie they tell themselves is, I'm indestructible. I can't be touched. I can't be touched. And we hear that many times. There's nothing that you can do to us. There's nothing, you know, we're here to stay, etc., etc. Another lie that they tell is that either God has forgotten or God isn't concerned with this situation anymore. This is, God's got bigger things to deal with. Have you ever heard somebody say, "Well, I didn't want to pray about that because God's got a lot more going on, and I didn't want to bother him with this insignificant prayer." Are you serious? This infinite God that is not touched by the affairs of man in the aspect that he changes his unchangingness, his immutability. He does concern himself with the very small things with man, the things that we consider small, because he can handle it. He's not like your computer or your phone that starts running slower the more applications or tabs that you have open. It finally gets to the point, there's just too much going on here, I need to hit the reset button and start over. No, God can handle that. In verse number 11, this is what the wicked lies to himself about. He says, God's forgotten. He says, he has said in his heart, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face. He will never see it. In other words, God's not going to concern himself with this. It's not so much, this verse can certainly relate to the aspect of the wicked wanting to do something in secret and in darkness. There's no question about the context. But certainly, it can have to do with the fact that, you know, God's just not going to deal with that. That's not something God concerns himself with. In a society that wants to paint Jesus as a socialist or something else and make him fit their political narrative, this is the day that we live in. And we have to accept that these lies that are being told by the wicked, they really believe. They really believe it. As a Christian, there's many times I'm tempted to do something, and I think God is watching. God knows. God knows what I just contemplated. And it restrains me. His law restrains me and causes me to realize there's a penalty attached to the very law of God. And I don't want to fail in that area. Another lie that they tell themselves is that in the end, God's not going to ultimately judge anyway. He's not going to do all that's being said that he's going to do. Verse number 13, it says, "Wherefore doth the wicked contemn God?" How does he do that? "He has said in his heart, Thou wilt not require it." You say God's going to judge. We're saying no. God's not going to require that. God's not a God of justice and judgment like you say. He's a God of mercy and a God of love and a God of acquiescing to the needs of man, the heartfelt needs of man in particular. But the truth is, God will judge. In fact, the last three verses, the Lord is king forever and ever. The heathen are perished out of his hand. Lord, thou hast heard the desire of the humble. Thou wilt prepare their heart. Thou wilt cause thine ear to hear, to judge the fatherless, and the oppressed, that the man of the earth may no more oppress. It's a beautiful day that we look forward to, a day that we rejoice in, and that we can be thankful for. Because not only do the wicked lie to themselves, there's things that they just simply ignore. One of them is that God sees everything. God hasn't missed anything. Look at verse 14. Thou hast seen it. For thou beholdest mischief and spite, to requite it with thy hand. The poor committeth himself unto thee. Thou art the helper of the fatherless. So the wicked likes to ignore the fact that God is actually seeing, and God, that his cup of wrath is filling up. That there's going to come a day that he will say no, you know, to the wicked and stop them. And that God holds man accountable. Last part of verse 14, God will, or the last part of the first line, he will requite it with his hand. And another truth they ignore is that God is now and has always been and will forever be in charge. He'll be in control. There's some in the charismatic movement today love to take the stage and talk about the demon that's ruling their city and over their city, and they cast it as a picture that, you know, nothing can be done without the leave of this demon, and how they're praying, you know, that he'll be put in chains and put in hell and all these various charismatic ideologies that are promoted. But Jesus is on the throne, and he will always be on the throne. The Lord is king forever and ever. And we can rest in that and know that nothing falls out to the believer but what God has determined will fall out to the believer. All you have to do is read Romans chapter 8, particularly the last few verses of Romans chapter 8. Verse 28 is a verse we quote a lot, but that entire section is Paul's constant reminder. This is how God cares for us. He doesn't forget us. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according, of course, to his purposes. His purpose is not going to be thwarted. And then lastly, because we're out of time, God is the judge of the oppressed. And that's the very last verse, verse 18. He judges the fatherless and the oppressed, that the man of earth may no more oppress. So if you feel like you're being unjustly treated, if you think things are not going your way as you'd like them to, the one hope you've got and the one comfort that you've got is that God is going to judge your cause. He'll judge your cause. It may all go wrong for you today and even in this life, but there is coming a day God will set things right, and you'll rejoice evermore in that. So rejoice now that God's in control and all things are working out as he has planned. Okay, that's kind of the outline of it. We'll pick up next week really with why are you hiding? So I guess this would be introduction to Psalm 10, since we didn't get to my points on why are you hiding. So let's bow for a word of prayer. We'll be back in here in 9 minutes. Father, thank you for this opening lesson of Psalm 10. It's a very encouraging book in that after all of the pictures of the wicked that are painted, it ends with the resounding fact that the Lord is King forever and ever. And we thank you for that great promise. And help us never to forget it, especially as we see dark clouds around us many times, that we would be faithful to rejoice evermore in your promises. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.